You probably remember when Sky Dome opened for Cheers. That must have been something else. They did the Cheers finale there, amazingly enough, in 93.
Did they really?
They did. They
wow.
That was the time, yeah, where all those Jays road games in the playoffs, all those ALCS games against the White Sox and the A's, they'd open up Sky Dome for those and get big crowds.
Well, I'm with you guys 100%, and I think, Ashley, you should make it a crusade today. I mean, obviously, if they haven't announced it's happening by now, it's not happening. And I don't know if there's anything going on there tonight or not. But like that scene last night, I just love when you're seeing the game in Boston and the Blues score, and then all of a sudden they take a shot of everybody going nuts at the arena in St. Louis or Busch Stadium. I thought it was really cool that Busch Stadium opened up. But let's do it. Let's get it done. Let's get as many people congregating together as we can. But I guess there must be. It's either logistics or money. Those are the only two reasons why they wouldn't do it.
Well, we'll come back around to the Raptors. But interesting, Edwin Jackson scratched from the start, but then got a lot of pitches, a lot of innings. He got his first win as a Blue Jay last night. Do we think that's more the role he's going to take? That was sort of a very sudden decision, and yet we still saw a lot of him last night.
Yeah, all they did was use Derek Law as an opener to have Law face the top of the order so that Jackson, if he were to give them some length, wouldn't have to face the top of the order three times. And this is the original reason that Tampa Bay did it. It is whoever the guy was, say a Ryan Yarbrough, he doesn't have quite the stuff that maybe a Ryan Stanek, a hard-throwing reliever, has. So let Stanek face the top three, four guys in the order, and then Yarbrough faces the bottom of the order one more time than he faces the top. And whether that made the difference for Edwin Jackson or not, or whether it's just that it was the Baltimore Orioles, who knows? But I think they'll do it again in 5 days. I mean, he certainly pitched well enough to get back out there. And again, they don't have a lot of other options right now, as Charlie Montoyo told all of us a few days ago. So, yeah, I could see in 5 days whether it's Law, whether it's Hudson, whether it's Jordan Romano, who knows? Somebody like that getting the opener assignment and then Jackson coming in after them.
Do you like the opener, and is it here to stay?
Listen, whether you like it is one story, whether it works is another. It works.
Okay.
It makes sense because what you're doing, again, is you're sending a hard-throwing reliever out against the big boys on the other team, and then you're sending a guy with lesser stuff but the ability to give you length. He can go out there and start by facing, say, the number five hitter or however it works out. So he's facing the bottom of the order more and the top of the order less. There is no question that it works. Is it here to stay? Yeah, I think so. Now, not every team is going to use it, and not every team will use it the same amount. You know, Tampa Bay still does it more than anybody else, but they started doing it last year because they had three of their projected starting pitchers on what was then known as the disabled list before the season started, and they didn't really feel like they had a choice. But I think most teams will use it occasionally if the situation warrants. You can call it a bullpen day. You can say that it's a Jackson situation, and you'd rather him not see the top of the order, but I think most teams will use it occasionally.
Dan Schulman, our guest. By the way, Jays Orioles wrap up from Camden Yards tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Raptors Warriors join in progress. It starts on 680 News, and when that game's over, Jays Orioles, we go right to Raptors Warriors on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Rap post-game show following the Raps game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Last thing on the Jays for now, Kevin Biggio kind of scuffling. I don't think there's any question about that, and you've seen it for decades, Dan. It's hitting in the big leagues, it is a hard thing to master. You have very rare rookies that come in at any age. The Chris Bryant, Acuna last year, and Trout, and they master it right away. What are you seeing with Biggio? And is there wasn't that danger with Vladdy, clearly, but is there any danger that it's more AAA Bison's time for Kevin Biggio, or is he here to stay regardless?
Yeah, no, I think it's possible. I mean, the one thing I see in Biggio that we didn't see in Vladdy is a lot of frustration. Like you see if he pops up a ball or he swings through a slider in the zone, you can see the look on his face saying, man, what's going on here? Or I thought I had that one. That's on the downside. On the upside, I think we should give him credit for this. He is still walking a ton. Like he's not chasing. He's still being who he is. He's just swinging and missing pitches in the strike zone, which obviously is important. You want him to make contact and get hits and get on base, but he is walking a lot. So I think that's a positive sign, and I think they give him more time to work it through. But lots and lots and lots of great young players have come up and gone back down to the minors. And if the frustration becomes overwhelming for him, you don't want to kill the kid's confidence. So, yeah, I think everything's on the table right now, but I think it's too soon to make a call.
Yeah, listen, Rome wasn't built in a day. There's no shame in being sent down, assigned, working on your craft and coming back up. And we know that things take time. And we've seen the Raptors kind of over the last 6 years build to this pinnacle, the DeMar DeRozan trade, the Kawhi Leonard acquisition. And now we're here. We're one game away, right? What are your feelings on game six here in Oracle? A lot of people saying there's no way the Raptors are going to win three in a row at Oracle. Well, they already did if you include the regular season. Now going for their fourth win in a row.
Yeah.
Dan, this is stressful for me.
This is stressful for everybody. I don't think the three in a row at Oracle is a thing. I think if they can, if they play better, they can win. There's no rule that says you can't win three in a row or four in a row on the other team's floor. I think the first 3-4 minutes, like they better come out and play well, because I think the intensity and the energy in the building is going to be off the charts. The fact that, you know, these Warriors fans got a bonus game that they might not have thought they were going to get. They're back, and now everybody knows it's for sure the last game in that arena. And to be honest with you, I think the way, and they won, not that our players had anything to do with it, the Raptors, but I think the way the fans reacted to the Durant injury has really, will really galvanize the fans and make the Raptors really the common enemy. You know, there's been a tremendous amount of mutual respect between the two teams, I think, but I think the fans are going to be nuts tonight. I think the Raptors have to come out with an us against the world mentality, just get through those first 3-4 minutes without, you know, Steph and Clay hitting three threes each and being down 18-5, and then see where you are. The other thing I think is going to be different tonight is I think Curry and Thompson are like with Durant out for sure, obviously, I think Curry and Thompson are likely to play 44, 45, 46 minutes tonight. Like, there aren't going to be many moments where there's only one of them on the floor, and I think the Raptors have to be prepared for that, that whether it's Kawhi playing more or, you know, Van Vliet, make sure he's in there almost all the time when Steph is. When Steph goes out, Van Vliet goes out, whatever the case is. But I think they better be ready for an unbelievably, you know, strong pushback from Golden State tonight to try to get back here for Game 7.
The excellent Dan Shulman talking to us. Greg Brady, Ashley Docking, Sportsnet 590, the Fan starting lineup. Baseball is not a contact sport, but you've seen it on many occasions where players, and this speaks to the Durant issue. I think the Warriors are taking too much from some corners in terms of the pressure. I don't think Kevin Durant feels, he may feel it from his teammates, but I don't think he's feeling organizational pressure to play. Players know their own bodies. Kawhi Leonard got castigated last year by really credible people in San Antonio, Greg Popovich, and they said, come on, get out here, join us. Tony Parker said it. But you've seen it in baseball. Like, if we're going to romanticize the Kirk Gibson home run, right, he can't walk. We're going to romanticize Curt Schilling in the bloody sock. You can't turn around the other way and go, well, those players should never have been allowed to play in those situations, right?
Yeah, and we've all read and heard an incredible amount on this in the last 48 hours, and my take is just this. We don't know. We don't know exactly what the MRI showed. We don't know exactly what the conversations were. And from what we knew, it was a strained calf. Now it's a torn Achilles, obviously an incredibly serious and potentially career-altering injury. But back then, we thought it was a strained calf. And yeah, we said, hey, the ice pack's a little bit low. I wonder if it's an Achilles. But I think the Warriors, you know, Steve Kerr, and everybody's been careful to say, Durant's outside people were involved in this as
yes,
well. Now, maybe
yes,
they're just covering their behinds by saying that. But I don't feel qualified to go out and start throwing blame around, because we don't know what the previous MRI or X-ray or whatever showed and what conversations were had. Maybe Kevin Durant was banging his fist on the table and saying, damn it, let me play. And maybe he wasn't. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. So I don't feel qualified to judge one way or another. I just think it's a shame that one of the great players in the sport has an injury that might alter the rest of his career, because love him or hate him, he's good for basketball. He's one of the two or three best players in the game.
You're right, and there's too much of that, and there's the instantaneous reaction online, but yeah, you were front and center for the Zion Williamson injury, and I couldn't believe the people saying, well, you know, just sit and protect your paycheck. He's there 1 year. Like, I know it feels like Duke wins every year, but he went to Duke to win and play in the tournament. They've only won three titles since 1992. I know it feels like they do it every year, but Zion was never going to like sit out the rest of the, it's never going to not come back if he was able to.
No. And there were many, many people, almost all of them from the pro ranks, not in the college ranks, who were saying, shut it down, protect your investment, kid. You're your own meal ticket. But at the end of the day, you're right. The person involved should have a say in the matter. And Zion clearly wanted to play. Now, again, maybe Zion's injury, relatively speaking, was much less serious than Durant's original "quote unquote" strained calf. We don't know. So, but I applaud the fact that he wanted to play. The only thing I would say, and this is just based on evidence, this is not, I guess it's my opinion of the evidence, is all he practiced once, he played a little one-on-one, and he went up and dunked a few times. That's not a lot. But we understand, like, if this were December, he wouldn't have played. He would have been out another week or two ramping up. This was game five of the NBA Finals, and they were down 3-1. So, you know, there is a little bit of desperate times call for unusual measures, at least. So, you know, maybe they rushed him back a little bit because that's, you know, for to be out 32 days or whatever he was, and to say, yeah, he played a little bit of one-on-one and he took some shots at practice, that's not a lot. But, listen, it's the finals. Zdeno Chara was out there playing with a broken jaw. Chara. Like, sometimes people do these kinds of things.
Clay Thompson missed a game last Wednesday in the NBA Finals. He wouldn't play in December. I mean, Pascal Siakam would have missed regular season games and gutted it out against Philadelphia. So you're right. A lot is left. Outside of concussions, players are going to know their bodies better than anybody else, and they're gonna fight and scrap to be out there. Absolutely, every time.
And you know what? He could have done it in the first minute. He could have done it in the last minute, and he just happened to push off and plant, and the Achilles gave way. And again, it's not good for the sport. And I was just sitting at home watching with family, but my reaction was like, oh man, like I wanted the Raptors to win with him on the court. And above and beyond that, you just don't like to see anybody get hurt, and nobody should ever applaud anybody getting hurt for any reason. But you know, now it is what it is, and it's Thompson and Curry, and they still have a great team. They still have Green and Iguodala and Cousins, and they're still going to be proud champions. They are proud champions, and they're not going to go easily.
If it goes well tonight, Dan, party responsibly. I'm for horn honking in the suburbs. There's only one day of school left of the week. Try and get in the door before like 4:30 or 5. Maybe, I think, right?
I will be in bed before you guys, even though you guys have to wake up earlier than I do.